Welcome to Daddy Versus Doctor. Here are your hosts, pediatrician Dr. Scott Cohen and comedian Sebastian Maniscalco.
Welcome to Daddy Versus Doctor. My name is Sebastian Maniscalco, Dr. Scott Cohen across the beautiful marble table.
And if anybody forgets who you are, they can look at your jacket.
Yeah, I have my name on my jacket. I just pulled this out of the closet and I said, you know what? I'm going to wear my, this is my Madison Square Garden jacket, by the way.
Oh, that's nice. You had that made? They made it for you?
They gave it to me.
That's great. That's nice.
Legitimate.
No, it's huge.
I'm not a guy that wears like these, like anytime I get like a swag jacket or whatever, I basically put it in what I call a memory box and just have it there. Yeah, I never generally nice wear it, but I feel like an electrician with the name.
But if I had known, I should have worn a scrub that says Dr. Scott on it. You know, I don't own anything with my name on it. I should.
Well, don't you have?
Maybe Madison Square Garden won't make something for me.
What? Don't you have like a white lab coat that says Dr. Scott?
We don't wear lab coats.
I know, but way back when. If you had, like 20 years ago, you weren't in a lab coat. You were always dressed in like
Had lab coats, yeah. And then we had name tags. We didn't have, stitching's expensive. It's very difficult.
We thought it'd be fun this morning to start off the show with a mailbag item. Mailbag is something we do where we get questions from you, the listener, the viewer, and discuss some of the questions. So let's start off with what we got.
We're gonna jump right in to the bag.
Okay, what do we got? We got, hi guys, got a minor problem. A few years ago, me and my wife started letting our son sleep in our bed about every other night. When he had nightmares, when he was restless, and then eventually whenever he or she wanted. Well, he's 6 years old now, and there's barely a night he doesn't sleep on our bed. We've tried breaking this a few times with stern warnings, locking the door, etc., but we eventually cave into his needs. It is affecting our intimacy. Who wants to bone when your kid is likely to walk in?
Wow.
Well, do you use that one?
Are these real?
Sexual intercourse?
There's an email account that's receiving constant flow.
I just, before you even finish the question, I want to like, if you're referring to your sexual intercourse as boning, I think we got to look at the marriage, right? Also, I want to this is total side note, and I heard this recently. Yeah. I don't know if Erin does this to you, all right? But if she does, it needs to stop.
I can't imagine the segue you just went from boning to mentioning my wife's name.
It has something to do with boning.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Uh-huh. I've heard this more than once.
Yes.
That women
uh-huh.
deprive men
uh-huh.
of sex
uh-huh.
because they didn't do something. It's almost like a punishment. Like, I ain't having sex with you this week because it's like they withhold sex
right.
because there was a issue in the marriage. Are you dealing with this?
No, I mean, I hope not. I don't think so.
Well, a friend of mine is going through this right now where, my wife won't have sex with me. Why not? Well, because I'm in the doghouse. If you're in the doghouse already, sex ain't happening. It's not like when you're mad at one another, it's not the next thing is like, let's go bone.
Right.
As this person refers it to.
I was going to say, this has to be somebody from New Jersey. And I looked down and it says Jimmy in Jersey City.
Oh, yeah. Jimmy in Jersey City is boning people. So,
with his make-believe wife, this is his fictitious family.
So what is the question?
Any advice on how we break this habit? So the child's sleeping with the kid, the parents, and
this
has nothing to do with nightmares.
Okay, but I want to touch on these two points.
Yes,
you are setting yourself up for a disaster if you allow your kid to come in your bedroom and sleep in the bed. It's an extremely hard habit to break. We never went through it. Thank God the kids stay in their room. They don't move. They come. They go in at 7. They come out at 7. Right. There's no coming in at midnight or what have you. And number two, nightmares. When do kids start dreaming?
Uh-huh.
What age?
No, I mean, they start dreaming early, but nightmares and night terrors most commonly around when imagination peaks in the 4 year range, 3 to 4 year range. So that's typical.
Okay. And I don't know if you know this question, but I'm going to throw it out at you. What causes, because I was told by my mother, if you eat, if you eat before you go to bed, you're going to have nightmares.
Oh, yeah. No, that was a good way to get her. Your wife says, if I withhold sex from you, you're not going to have nightmares. Right. That didn't even make sense. I was trying to bring us back to that. Yeah.
Once again, but anyway, stick
to the medicine. Yeah. I don't think eating before bed causes nightmares.
Okay. That's what I was told growing
up. It's developmental imagination going crazy. Very common. Normal development.
Okay.
You know, there's two types of things, right? You know, nightmares and night terrors.
Again, just grew up with nightmares.
Yeah.
No one ever heard of night terrors. Please tell us the difference.
So different phases of sleep. So you'll hear about a child who a couple hours after going to sleep wakes up screaming. Sometimes their eyes are open. Sometimes they're saying things. They're throwing punches. They actually look like they're awake. It's the same phase of sleep. It's actually deep sleep, stage four sleep that you're in when you're sleepwalking. And it's earlier in the sleep cycle. You don't remember it in the morning. Mm-hmm. And the idea is keep the lights off, keep your voice down, lay them back down, hug, you know, you don't want to wake them up. It's more arousing, more scary. Nightmares is what you think about. Bad dreams, REM, late, you know, mid to end of sleep cycle. You remember them the next morning. Treatment's still the same going as a parent. Keep the lights off, keep your voice down, hold, hug, lay them back down. But just two different things that can look similar but different stages of sleep.
Got it. I mean, I've heard screams come out of the room, right?
Yeah.
But we just chalk it up to a nightmare or whatever they had. We don't go check.
Yeah.
It's just like, and then, okay.
A lot of times, right, they're unaware. So like, that's why if they're sleeping, a lot of kids' eyes will be closed. Kids are very like vocal and kinetic sleepers. They move a lot. They make a lot of noises. It usually bothers us, but if it's not bothering them, let's just let them be.
Is that something that happens? Because I've noticed Serafina, she'll be, even Caruso, they'll be sideways. They'll be down on the bed. They'll be over here, over there.
Yeah.
And is that something that kids just kind of eventually grow out of?
Yeah, I think it gets better over time. And it doesn't, I tell people, just because they're moving around, just because they're making noise, doesn't mean they're sleeping poorly.
Yeah.
It's just usually you hear from families that the child's sleeping right next to them. It's waking you up constantly. I mean, I can't sleep. When my girls, I mean, they never did, but every once in a while, you know, like there's a foot in your head and a turn. I can't. That's my wife blames me. It's usually me that's moving around so much. She'd rather sleep with them than me, probably.
Love what Dr. Cohen did just then is, and I'm going to implement this into my own vocabulary and speech pattern. He referred to aggressive sleep and high movement as kinetic.
Kinetic.
And I think that's a nice word.
Kinetic movement.
Kinetic movement. You ever learn a word and you can't wait to put it in a sentence?
You let me know when you
use that. At a later date.
In like, a sentence.
Like, I'm going to use the word, and Alana will disagree with me, but I feel.
Yeah.
I have more of an abundant vocabulary than my wife, right? And I believe if I'll throw out this word with her, and I won't even reference that I threw it out, and I guarantee she'll absorb the word and start using it. She's almost aping my vocabulary.
Oh, she's learning from you.
Yeah,
it's like AI.
But she'll never.
You're training the AI to use. So we could do that experiment. We just drop words and ideas and see if they come up later on. That'd be amazing.
Well, I mean, who do you think has a better vocabulary, yourself or Aaron, your wife?
I mean, Aaron speaks probably more properly than I do. She's always editing my stuff.
Okay.
But so, I think they're pretty equal. Pretty equal.
As far as intelligence is concerned.
Oh, she's much more than I am.
Okay.
Yeah.
But in what, like in reading retention, in everyday knowledge. Like, who's more prone to go, let me Google that in your relationship?
Here's the difference in our intelligence. She will agree. For Erin to get from point A to point Z, she is very methodical. She needs to go through all 26 letters of the alphabet. The way my brain works is immediately if you tell me to go from A to Z, I'm trying to figure out the shortest way to do it, the shortcut. So it's just, we go about things differently. You know, she's very methodical. Everything is very much in its place and appropriate. And I'm always looking for little shortcuts, which my way bothers her because it's like, well, why do you always have to find a shortcut for things? And her way bothers me because like it feels long. Things take long. But very successful. She does it and she's very successful in the way. I just couldn't do it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Like we do it when it's funny when the kids come with like math problems, right? You know, she's like the way the schools want it, where it's like step by step by step. And I'm like, we'll just go from here to here. Just get to the answer. It doesn't make a difference.
Well, this is what's going to concern me is when the kids are going to start coming up to me for help.
Yeah.
In school. I want to know where kind of my education dips
where
off.
Did it end? What grade does it end at?
Although I have a college education.
Right.
I don't believe I, you know, like if you threw me in eighth grade right now, I might have trouble.
Right.
Passing a test.
Right.
Right.
But it's right. It's different knowledge. Right.
Well, is it like if they gave you a history exam, an eighth grade history exam?
I probably wouldn't pass it either.
You wouldn't pass.
Well, what was that show? Fifth grader.
It's
like all those questions. I don't remember those. Now, if you gave me a science book and a history book in fifth grade and gave me a couple of days, yeah, I'd get all the answers right. But like right off the bat,
I couldn't even say that I would get the answers right. That's. I don't know what happened to me if there was. I don't know. I just feel my level of absorbing information, being able to retain it and refer to it has really dipped off in the last 3 to 4 years. But I am using Kinetic in a sentence this weekend to see how that happens. Yeah.
The good news is your job will be one of the few that won't be replaced by AI. So you're okay.
I don't know, man. I am really scared to see where this AI goes.
They're gonna do stand-up comedy.
Well, I tell you what, we did this on the other podcast. We threw in a joke, to AI and said to AI, write a joke like Sebastian Maniscalco and spit out 3 jokes. Were they over the top hilarious? No, but.
It wasn't.
I wouldn't mind taking a seedling of it and going, okay, I could work with that.
So that's how I've used it a couple times because I think it's very quick on giving you a framework that makes, because a lot of times when you have an idea, getting it down on paper is the hardest part, and it does a great job of like spitting out a framework and then you can mold it. I don't think the finished product is great. Like it's not what I would do, but I think yes, for an initial framework. So that's interesting even for jokes, because I thought as far as like sense of humor and artistic quality, it wouldn't be good.
Well, what it does is
it finds all your jokes, right?
Yeah, you could feed it my 6 specials. It will recognize a pattern and then take that pattern. Because what did we do? We did write a joke about standing in line, waiting in line at the grocery store as Sebastian Maniscalco, and it spit out 3 samples. And I was like, oh, okay, these are, you know. These I could work with these. Similar to a letter. I have problems writing an email.
Right. It gives you a good framework.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's say if you wanted to tell an employee that they're getting a promotion and you wanted to put it in writing, you'd write into the AI promotional letter.
Right.
Or looking for an employee, and it would spit you back something. You're like, this is...
Yeah. It is. I mean... It will be interesting what jobs get replaced.
Well, they could recognize your voice, right? Mm-hmm. So you can talk into a microphone. AI will recognize your voice and then talk back to you the way you just talked into the microphone. They'll apply your voice to different words. So who's to say that AI, you could throw in the jokes, right? Then
hear your voice.
Hear the voice, and you could listen to a audio recording of not me say jokes like me.
Would you trust it diagnosing your child? So this just came up. There was actually a report. They put in a scenario, a vignette of a patient with an uncommon illness, and they compared it to doctors taking a board exam to see, you know, percentage-wise, and AI got it correct more often than a lot of the doctors got it on their board exam. And the answer was congenital adrenal hyperplasia, which is something that sometimes we see. Not so rare. But it's just very interesting that it picked it out. Now, I wonder, you know, what we're feeding it, we're leading the witness a little bit, right? Like, if you only fed me the pertinent symptoms, it's easier to come up with the diagnosis than if you just came in and talked for 30 minutes and weeded it out. I think the hard thing in medicine with computers, and we see this with Google, you put in symptoms, you can get a million different answers, and they can even tell you which are the most likely. But I just feel there's this human touch in, of really knowing what it is. It, you know, the practice of medicine really is, you know, I've seen this, I've done it. And I guess, you know, ChatGPT, right, can go through millions and millions of cases and I guess get that experience. I just have a hard time. Would you trust AI with like diagnosing your child with an illness? I think it's an adjuvant, like it helps, but it's not the end all be all. But maybe I'm being naive.
Well, here, you know, AI drive cars, right?
Right.
So they're saying that the way a car is driven by a computer is far superior than a human, yeah. Right? And we've talked about this in the past of misdiagnosing a disease or something. I mean, there's a human error involved in
100%,
right?
Yeah.
But if an AI can access, and this is different than Google, because Google, I think, what they...
So nebulous.
Yeah.
So much.
But AI, if this is another form of a search engine, but is utilizing, you know, peer-reviewed journals and doctor website and formulating all that and going, oh, yeah, you have testicular cancer.
Sure.
Based on your history and whatnot. I don't know. Yeah. Would I trust it now? Maybe not, but 10 years from now, who's to say that this is...
Yeah, I mean, I think with a person right now, I think it could be a tool to weed things down. Like, I've done that with cases that I know are going to be something very unusual. I'll throw in some, like, symptoms and just more to give me a list of things to think about myself, and then I can go through that list and be like, it's not that, it's not that. But I don't use it to say... This is what it is.
Yeah.
All be all.
No. It would be hard for me to listen to a computer saying, "Oh, you have a rare type of brain cancer," and I go, "Hold on, let me go to a doctor."
Right.
But I mean, I don't know where this is going. Where in 20 years is a doctor gonna go, "You got brain cancer," and then let me go to AI.
Yeah.
I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. You know.
We become the Google and they become the expert, right? Like, who's that quack thing? I know.
But there's something to be said about a doctor and talking to a doctor, a bedside manner, you know. I don't think you want a printout of a disease, you know. I think you want somebody to say, hey, you know what? You have this, but don't worry. We have A, B, and C we could do. Right. And I couldn't take it in an email from AI saying you got 3 weeks to live.
Right. Well, some of the most intelligent people that are more robotic and don't have a bedside manner aren't necessarily the people you want to be your doctor in some cases. So I think that does matter. I hope it matters. So I can tell jokes.
Mm-hmm. When and how do you talk to your kid about sex? Is this a typical age where you say, hey, this is how it happens, this is what you should be doing? Does that happen at your office? When they turn 15, we introduce this.
Yeah. I don't think it's one age, one conversation and done. I think it's a spectrum of conversations that start early and then sort of grow on each other, depending on the child's development. So I think early on, and you see this in schools around fifth grade, so these are the 10-year-olds, you know, 10, 11-year-olds. In school, they usually do a health class and science class where they start talking about just puberty, right? Mm-hmm. So a lot of the girls have started puberty even in fourth grade, you know, 8, 9, 10. Boys are a little later, so fifth grade. So usually in that fourth and fifth grade, you want to preempt that discussion so they know about puberty ahead of time. So it's more how your body's changing, emotions, development, what to expect. Then usually as you're approaching junior high, so the seventh graders, then they have usually like a health class at school where now they're talking about like sex, drugs, and rock and roll. So you're sort of talking about those things. A lot of times when you talk about those things beforehand, it's very abstract to the child. They don't really understand it. So it's sort of phases. And then we start talking about not just how your body's changing, but interactions you're having with other children, possible sexual interactions, exposure to drugs, cigarettes, vaping, all that stuff. That starts that discussion. And then after junior high, it just continues from that. So what we do, you know, starting at 13 in the office, I ask the parents, you'll see this. I say, you know, now that you're 13, if it's okay with you and your parents, after we go over some other things like things parents love, the growth, the development, all that stuff, if I could talk to you one-on-one and we talk about teenage stuff. And everything we talk about is between me and you, and I don't go out and tell your mom and dad anything, even if they beg me. It's the best part of my job. The only thing I would have to report is if you told me you were going to hurt yourself or someone else. So that's sort of my typical spiel. Parents are usually all for it, and it allows the one-on-one discussion with the child, not just for me to educate, but also to see what they know and what they're ready to discuss. I mean, there are 13-year-olds who already have exposure and experiences, and we got to dive deep. And then there are 13-year-olds who, you know, the mention about some sort of sexual interactions is so foreign to them, you know, this isn't necessarily the right time to have that discussion.
Okay, so over the last 20, 25 years you've been doing this, have you noticed there has been a uptick in a sexual activity amongst teenagers? Or do you see that, are you going like, man, they're having sex earlier and earlier, drugs are very prevalent, or is it the same?
I feel like exposures have increased a lot. Not, you know, my population of patients, maybe they're not having those interactions so much earlier. Some are, some aren't. But I think everybody's exposed much earlier because of social media, right? So everybody knows somebody who maybe has had sexual interactions with somebody else, somebody who smoked, somebody who vaped. I mean, I feel like I went through junior high, high school, and maybe I had like blinders on. And I was so naive. Like I didn't know about any of that stuff. I was in a bubble. Everybody's aware of it. And kids are usually good about, I'm not doing it, and even my friend group isn't doing it, but definitely those kids are doing it. Mm-hmm. And it just starts that discussion because they see it also on social media. I mean, they're just around it all the time.
I didn't see it anywhere growing up. Obviously, we didn't have social media, but I gotta tell you, what I was doing in the backyard with some of the girls in the neighborhood was beyond my years. I mean,
I thought you were going to say what you were doing by yourself in the backyard was beyond your years.
I remember this girl down the street. Her name was Kathy, and she used to come over, and I used to go in the backyard and make like a little tent for us to go into and fool around. But it was like, you know, it's got to be around fifth, sixth grade. Yeah, I felt like even though the only exposure we really had to anything sexual was we used to go in the woods, and there was a box of like Playboy and Hustler that someone had dropped off there. And I remember we used to thumb through. It was like our porn stash.
Right. Back in the way you live in Oregon was like the trail you were out there.
You know what I did find in my dad's stash?
Yeah.
On Betamax, he had, and he, I don't know if he brought it over from Sicily or what, but it was like one of those Italian pornos, but it wasn't like explicit. It was, just like a
like feeding each other like mozzarella.
Like really sensually.
Yeah, they were eating bruschetta naked.
I remember being at my friend Brian's house, and they had in their basement, which we didn't have, they had cable TV and they had Cinemax. And I remember him putting it on, and like there was a scene, you know, like Skinemax, that for the first time, and it was like blew my mind. Because up until that point, it was mainly like, right, it was Esquire magazine and a girl in a dress.
It's funny growing up, going over to friends' houses and whatnot. We went over to a friend of ours' house. He goes, my father's got a we call them nudie mags back then. He's got a nudie mag stash. So we went in to see, literally a closet was stacks of magazines. And back then I was like, this ain't right. You know, like,
we can't be friends anymore.
Like, he's married to your mom, right? And we went in there, he had like a library of like, you know, and this was like, this wasn't Playboy or Hustler. This was like, you know, explicit, you know, like the ones where when you went to the store, they had to put a cardboard on the cover.
Because at 7-Eleven.
It was like a bukkake scene on the cover.
What? How old were you? Do you remember anybody sitting with you and talking about this stuff? Because I think that's the other thing. Nowadays, there's so much exposure, whether it's social media or friends or somebody, that it is important to have these little discussions with an adult, so at least they have good information and they feel comfortable with it.
No, like to your point, we had sex education in fifth grade. Yeah. I remember specifically them talking about that. At home, my parents, it was, our sex education was, God, this is what my...
I don't even...
This wasn't going on in your house, I guarantee it. My mom used to say, put a cap on it.
Like yelled across the house?
Yeah, like if I was going out or whatever.
To you, not to your father.
No.
I thought bedtime, kids are in bed and she's screaming in her apron. Put a cap on it, and you just knew, stay in my room.
No.
Talk about nightmares.
No, this was our sex education. Put a cap on it if you do anything. Okay.
Did you even know what that meant, though?
Yeah, I mean, in general, I knew what she was talking about it, but I told my mom I was having sex with my girlfriend at 16. It kind of came up in conversation. Yeah. She goes, I don't know what you're doing, you know, if, you know, you guys are... I go, yeah, mom, we're intimate together. She goes, what? She was stunned.
Yeah.
At 16, I was having sex. And then I'm thinking about my kids. I have kids, my beautiful little daughter, if she had sex at 16, I think I might have a stroke.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I know.
I mean, I can't get over how young. I don't even know what...
I was so late. I was so naive.
When were you? Did we talk about when he had sex for the first time? What was it, 19?
I was in college.
Oh, you were in college. Jesus. What the fuck were you doing in high school? Just pulling it the whole time?
I was studying.
That's the difference between doctors and like guys like me. Like guys like me, no, I was 16. And then this guy's like in...
Was it? Well, yeah, 18, 19 was it? Yeah, it was
16.
Was it? Maybe it was it earlier and I just don't remember.
No, well, now that you said it, you go, I don't look cool. Now I got to go, it was 17.
I told you when I went to summer camp and we were going through the Rite Aid and we were picking out deodorants and certain number of bars of soap, you went through your checklist and we got to the counter and they were checking out and there's a box of condoms and I said to my mom, I go, what are those? And she goes, you never know. And I'm like, no, I pretty much know. And she was like, well, you never know. And those things expired before I used them.
Wow, college. Yeah. That's late. That's a late bloom.
and on the special edition of Daddy versus Doctor.
Hey, sometimes you gotta...
This is what I want to do. I'm serious about this. Yeah. I've wanted to do this for a long time. You'd be the perfect person to do this with. So still, have you seen these sex education videos they show at schools?
No.
Okay. They're horrible. They're still like the 1970s. Like they're wearing overalls. Hey, Johnny, let's go to the park and kiss, you know, things like that. We got to revamp the sex ed education that's seen around the country. Every school does it. It should be funny. It should be new wave. It should be social media. It should be all that stuff, because the kids, like, I watch the kids watching it. They think it's a joke.
Yeah. I'm surprised they're still using antiquated videos from the 80s.
I mean, they're showing pictures of, like, pubic hair that are, like, curly pencil drawings.
So what would you have? Like just bald now? Everybody's shaving it down to street level, and you're like, this is what you're supposed to do. Clip your balls. this is going off the rail. No, but you bring up a great point in regards to how do you educate kids on sex today opposed to 30 years? I mean, don't you have to have some component of social media? And I don't know if social media is even covered in
education. It's not at all, which is crazy. And in that talk, it's not even covered.
Yeah, I mean, like, don't you think in the sex education talk, there should be a segment there about, like, predators preying off kids through Instagram, TikTok, or what have you, to even be aware of that?
Right.
I mean, I would think this would be a class.
What it needs to be is it needs to be a discussion, mm-hmm. right? Because what we do to kids, I do it in my office, unfortunately, in the schools, we lecture to them. We say, here's the material, and this is what you should know. What it should be is, okay, that's great, but what do you know? What are you seeing? What questions do you have? What have you seen on the internet that you're wondering about, right? Because that's when the interesting topics are going to come up that everybody's thinking about and exposed to, but nobody talks about.
Yeah, but I mean, you want to open up that discussion. Yeah, I think you'd be shocked.
No, I know.
What kids would say.
And I think the kids are going to know more than the adults about it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
But I think it has to have a discussion so that you know what to worry about and what not to worry about. I mean, I think about, yeah, I mean, the predators, gosh. I mean, I tell Aaron's like, before Aubrey goes to college, she's going to watch every season of SVU. And what's the Liam Neeson movies?
Oh, Taken?
Taken, yeah. We're going to watch all those and scare the crap out of her and be like, you know, but it's scary. That stuff's scary when you think about it as a father.
Yeah. Here's something I want to share with the audience, and this is something that wasn't really taught to me at a young age. I want to get your take on teaching kids about money.
Mm.
Serafina and Caruso have a piggy bank.
Yeah.
And they have money. The denominations are between $1 and $50.
Okay. Right?
Grandparents give money, what have you, money for birthday, whatever. So what I did with Serafina is I told her how to organize her money. And what I mean by organize the money is what I do with my wallet. I have all the heads of the presidents facing the same way. Okay. There's not an upside down head.
All right,
for me, it's easy to have all the heads facing the right way okay. when I count it out. And then what I do is I go from, you know, big bills to small bills.
Okay.
And then I turn it and I have the ones on the outside and I put it in my money clip.
Okay. Right.
So.
You seem so Italian there. You're like, money clip.
Do you have cash on you right now?
In my wallet, in my car. But very little.
Like,
I feel like I don't have my wallet on me most of the time.
Do you know how much money you have in your wallet right now?
No.
No. Did you at one point?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you guys know how much money you have in your wallet right now?
But we don't use cash as
no,
much.
No, no, no. How much do you have?
I just have a five right now.
You have a five. Wow. No wonder you know.
Can you get me a Mountain Dew later?
Do you know how much you got?
Yeah, I think I got about $160.
$160.
Okay.
Okay.
Wow.
See, I
do you know?
Do I know? No, yeah, I don't know. I know. I used to know how much money.
He's got five. Yeah.
And I don't know if that's because money is not used as much, therefore I do not know how much I have, or I'm wondering if when you make money, if you just, like, you know, you just have money in your wallet. You know what I'm saying? Like, I used to know how much money I had in my checking account
right
If somebody goes, how much you got in a checking account? I would say, I got $864.14.
Right. I knew that, right. In college, I knew that when I had my first job. Yeah. Because every dollar. So I think in that essence, every dollar was meaningful.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to know because I was paying bills and I had to know exactly. And when you get to, there's a little bit of cushion, it's not as worrisome. But for me, the wallet isn't that. One, we don't use cash much.
We don't use cash. But my point is with the kids.
Yeah.
When do kids start realizing, like, does Aubrey know,
mm-hmm.
oh, wow, dad drives a Tesla.
Mm-hmm.
A Tesla is $100,000
mm-hmm.
and the Mazda Miata is, when do they start knowing? Because, like, Caruso's like, I'm going to buy a monster truck when I grow up.
Right.
And I go, okay, you're going to have to, he goes, no, you'll buy it. I go, no, I ain't going to buy it.
Right.
You know, and I go, that's a lot of money.
Right.
But where does it?
Yeah.
No, is this early to be teaching kids, like, listen, you know how much $50 is?
Right.
$50 could buy you that.
They have no. At his age, it's totally abstract, right? It's
yeah.
just money is used to get things.
Yeah, yeah.
But like you said, the $1 and the $50, it doesn't make any bit of a difference. I think definitely like the junior high and high school kids definitely know the difference. I still don't think they're good at really understanding what it takes to make that money. Perfect example. We're on vacation. We're talking about colleges. Lexi, who's my almost 13-year-old, said, I would love to go to University of Hawaii. What she knows of University of Hawaii is that it's in Hawaii, mm-hmm. right? So we're just talking about Hawaii. So she goes on the internet and she says, so if I go to college there, you guys should buy a house there because then I can stay in it with my roommates and rent it out and make money off of it. And she's, hey, that's actually a great business plan. So she finds a house and the house is $2 million. Okay. Again, like $2 million, that's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, Lexi, who's paying for this house? She's like, well, you guys are. And I'm like, no, what if you had to buy a house that your friends stay in? She goes, okay. And I said, all right, how are you going to pay for that? Oh, I'm going to get a job. Okay. All right. So you're going to work at Starbucks for $15 an hour. I want you to do the math right now. You got to put 20% down of the 2 million. So 400,000. I want you to divide 400,000 by $15 an hour. And how many hours does that take? Now divide that by 366 hours a day. Basically, she has to work for the next 17 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
For 6 hours a day every day. So that's the part they don't get.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's like, oh yeah, I'm just gonna buy it.
Yeah.
So I think that is very hard for, I mean, I think adults still have a hard time with that.
No, absolutely. Right? And to that point, and I saw this online the other day. Some financial people say, buy your kids
mm-hmm.
a house
mm-hmm.
now.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I would buy Serafina a home
yep.
at 6. It's in her name.
Right.
Rent it out.
Mm-hmm.
She builds credit,
yeah, yeah.
equity,
mm-hmm.
the whole thing.
Yeah.
They also say employ.
Well, yeah, we do that.
Your
we
kids.
The kids.
Mm-hmm. But what age can you start employing your kids? Is it like, can I employ Caruso at 3, give him a salary?
No, I don't. And Aaron would know this, but it has to be something where they can actually do something, right? They'd have to be able to like file papers.
Who's to say? Caruso helps me
like that.
Set the podcast room right. up. He's moving right. shit from here to there. He gets $250,000 a year. I mean, he's
on the and then there's a limit. There's like a rational limit you can give. For that, you can't just pay him like right $1 million a year.
I know.
But yeah, but you want to do that early. One, it's good financially, but two, teaching them. Like you had Serafina washing dishes and chores. You do chores with the kids.
We do chores,
which is really good.
And I'm trying to implement that. Also, with this money thing in regards to buying them a house or what have you. Have you had to tell your kids? Or will you, or is there any limits to where they could go to college? My buddy's dealing with this right now with his 18-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
She's going to University of Miami,
uh-huh.
right? $90,000,
mm-hmm.
okay? And he's like, that's where she wants to go. Right. Who am I to say that I should, I'm going to pay the $90,000.
Right.
Do you, Do you draw limits?
So for education, I do not draw limits. If we are able to do it financially or we can take out loans, I feel like there's a way, and education is so important. But again, we just talked to family friends who they're going through this with their daughter. And when they looked at and they had a rational conversation with their daughter, and in the end, they said it's up to their daughter. But they said, if we look at one school that she's going to spend 90 grand a year, mm-hmm. or another school that's not as good, but she's going to get financial aid and spend 10 grand a year, we would rather give our daughter, we'd rather go to this school with the lower price tag and even give her the difference of money to use and invest and do that, because they feel like it's a better model.
Based on your daughters right now.
Yeah.
If you gave that option to them.
Yeah.
Do you think they would take the lesser school and pocket the money?
That's interesting.
Like if you told, or which one would do it?
Yeah.
If Aubrey wanted to go to Lexi wanted to go to University of Hawaii, right. and you said it's 60 grand.
Yeah.
But you could go to USC, it's 20 grand, and pocket the 40. Yeah.
I think one of them would take it if they could use that money for however they wanted it, but I wouldn't want, wouldn't be the deal, right? Yeah. The deal wouldn't the be deal you would can be. Have this money and go, you know, splurge it. It's for your life, you know. But I think education is so important. But it is interesting. I know. Are we going to use it the same way?
Is education important as it was
back then,
30 years ago? Because I'm looking at, like, I don't know, a lot of these successful people, and maybe they're just inherently intelligent and smart. Like, you know, you hear these guys, oh, yeah, I was going to Harvard, but I dropped out after a year, and I, you know, built
a
billion-dollar company.
Yeah.
And...
But those are the few and far
between. Yeah, they are. But the answers now are so, like, do you really need know anything?
No, the issue is, I think it depends on what occupation you end up being, right? I mean, there are certain occupations you have to get on the ride and just ride it out, right? If you know you're going into medicine, there's just a certain path. If you're going to be a lawyer, there's a certain path. So I think they're engineer. I think there's certain professions that there's a path created that you sort of have to follow. I think there's a lot of career paths that if you ended up coming out and doing it, you're not making enough to even pay back your education. And maybe if you knew that's what you wanted to do, you're better off doing that right from the get-go.
Yeah.
But how many 18-year-olds know exactly what they want to do for the rest of their life? That's the problem. And, you know, college is more than education. It's a life experience.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, college, I think I learned more on just life than I actually picked up in education, as we are seeing here on the show. Definitely, I'm at a deficit when it comes to book knowledge. This was just thrown in front of me. I don't know what it is. It looked odd.
Mm-hmm.
It looked really odd.
I didn't see it.
Let me pull this up, and we'll just look at it at the same time.
Yeah, I don't know what that is.
Oh, that's like, is it Chinese?
You know what that reminds me of? Hi Lai. You know that game, Hi Lai? They played in Florida
where they
threw the thing up, the ball up on the wall.
Okay.
What is that?
This is Japan's favorite musical toy. Okay? Can't read anything because it's all in Japanese. Right?
It's not bolted down. Packaging is excellent.
Yeah. I love the way this just pops out.
Pop that thing out.
So
how do you think you use that?
Well, I just want to
see if you can figure. Oh, it's electronic? Wow. Do you have to blow it? It's called Automatone. Japan's favorite musical toy. Easy touch electronic musical instrument.
It's not doing shit, man.
Automatone does not have any marker to strike exact notes like a keyboard. Place the unit on the practice sheet as shown.
There's a practice sheet. There you go.
So put it on like that. And then place you on the practice sheet as shown here and push the stem switch where the numbers are indicated on the sheet. There you go. Vibrato, a tremulous or pulsating effect produced in an instrument. Vibrate the stem while doing the push technique. But And then shake the stem. Press it and then shake it. Yeah, there you go, vibrato. There you go. Portamento, a continuous gliding movement from one tone to another. So you slide it down. Sounds like a grass whistle, it sounds like, all right? And then wah-wah, a musical special effect to produce voice-like tones, open and close the mouth while pushing the stem switch. So press it, and then open and close the mouth while you do that.
Okay, let me just give you, my take so far.
This is Japan's favorite musical toy.
This is why Japan and the Japanese are far superior than the Americans. 50 years old, right? Didn't know what was going on here. You, however, acted like you
were... No, I was just reading instructions.
You acted like you were Japanese. this is what I'm saying. It's like, again, anything that comes with this, hey, yeah, you're going to break it.
Do you have to do that? Hold on. Yeah, I mean, you could perform with this. I mean, if you had a choice between this and a harmonica.
Well, Caruso.
Equally annoying.
Caruso plays the harmonica. He goofs around with it. But if I left this out.
Yeah, thanks, Blues Traveler.
I want to do an experiment. Yeah. I want to leave this out.
Yes.
Just like this. Uh-huh. And I want to see if the kids could figure it out just by...
All right.
Just by touching and playing with it. Okay.
What's the point of the hook?
There we go. See? I mean, I had it like
one
this.
One of us is going to take an eye out.
It's supposed to go like this.
Yeah. So, interesting. Yeah, I'd like to see. We need to send. We'll post some videos of Serafina and Caruso playing Japan's favorite musical toy, the automaton. I feel cultured by this, though, because I've never even seen or heard one of these devices ever. Have you?
But I'm just fascinated how the Japanese mind works to even come. It's a musical note.
Yeah. So look at the kid playing it. The kid, it's just 4 and up. The kid's like 17 years old. and he's a scientist.
Yeah, look at that. $40. Okay.
I actually think we should become the number one reseller for automatons on Amazon. I think everybody should get one of these, and we should have automaton competitions. Like, let's put out there people to, Mary Had a Little Lamb, Hot Cross Buns. What can you play on this?
Listen, if you could send us a video of your kid playing this thing and it sounds any way, shape, or form like a song, we'll send you a swag bag of merchandise. It's not going to be Daddy Versus Doctor. It'll be my own personal merchandise. You'll get a book. You'll get a DVD, some T-shirts. Send it in, and we'll play it. If we play it on the show next week, you'll get a free swag bag.
And even better, I think if you have this on your child's resume, they're getting into college.
Oh, definitely. That's all you have to show up to the interview. Is like, I played this as a kid. You're in. Lollipops on this. Just... Because it's Japanese.
Yeah.
And I love Japan and the Japanese people.
Yes, you do.
6 out of 5.
I love it.
All right. 6 out of 5.
4.5 out of 5 just for the novelty of it.
Just for the novelty.
It's phenomenal.
Little high priced, but if this gets my kid to behave like a Japanese kid, I'm in.
So you know why it's $40? Because in Japan, this is their toy. They don't have a room full of toys.
No.
Dad got you this toy, and this is what you're going to play for.
You master this, and then you build a TV set. All right. Daddy Versus Doctor, thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next week.
The opinions expressed in this program are not intended as professional medical advice, as a diagnosis, as a treatment protocol, or as a substitute for professional medical advice from your physician. please consider your own medical history and consult with your own physician for your specific healthcare and/or medical needs and about your concerns for yourself and your family.